Get ready for Beyond the Arc, a show that eats, sleeps, and breathes the hardwood, featuring two guys who are always game time ready while the competition is still practicing.
We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice.
A couple of basketball junkies who shine a spotlight on the game of basketball all year long.
This is a preseason, right? We got to do this in the preseason? Are you kidding me?
Part of the contract.
In the preseason, we got to do this?
It's the coach, Brian Fulford.
My entire adult life, I've never used the expression game face.
And the scout, Steve Barnhart, from HardwoodHoopsCentral.com.
I know how to play the game. I don't think they know how to play the game when I'm talking to them.
Guys, it's time.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Arc. My name is Brian Fulford and I'm joined by my partner in the backcourt, Steve Barnhart from HardwoodHoopsCentral.com. Steve, how are we doing, my friend?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Man, I am great, although I got to admit, on a non-basketball story that just came across my timeline this evening that has me really bothered, Josh Gordon of the Cleveland Browns is apparently checking him back into – checking himself into rehab, which, hey, great for him. But he's 1 week away from being eligible to start on my fantasy team. And I was really counting on him. And now I don't know what the hell.
Hold
to
on
do.
A second.
So,
let me get this straight. You drafted a guy that has the sort of off-field issues that he has onto your fantasy football team. Yes or no?
I didn't draft him early, though.
Okay, my question to you was, you drafted
I like giving guys a second chance.
No. That's not Jerry Jones. That's Al Davis. Now, if you want to go all Al Davis and just basically, you know, pick all the, you know, size and speed and then they have no skill, that's your fault.
Well, Steve, I believe that Josh Gordon is an exceptional young man and has a great opportunity to turn his life around if he is a part of my fantasy team.
Is this your Jerry Jones impersonation? Because this is terrible.
That was pretty terrible, wasn't it? I thought I was going to try an Al Davis, but, you know, God rest his soul. I couldn't put in my into words the Al Davis. So the Jerry Jones just kind of came. I don't know if that was easily or what. That's pretty bad, though. But okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
anyway,
Steven, we'll move on since you're not a fan of Jerry Jones impersonation.
That was even worse. Listen, whoever is listening to this podcast right now just clicked off. They didn't even get to the basketball portion because we didn't even get to that point because you were too worried about Josh Gordon and his weeds.
Brian and Steve will be right back with some basketball talk.
Okay, God, please let's move on. I'm so concerned right now.
We want to make sure that you know how to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BTA Hoops. Our Facebook page is Beyond the Arc Podcast. And, of course, beyondthearcradio.wordpress.com.
And yet again, you have a script in front of you. Yet again.
I stumbled. Anyway. Email address
is... You can never do live news. Never. Would never happen. You have a great voice, and you could never do live TV. Never.
Wow, when you're scouting, do you tell all the kids that when they can't make a free throw? Kid, you'll never get a scholarship.
Let me tell you something. If I could tell these kids exactly what I was thinking in the moment, I would crush dreams. But I don't do that because I don't believe in doing that.
Just like you crushed mine
Steve. Well, let's be real. I don't think you have, you know, live TV aspirations. So I wasn't really crushing a dream. I was more like reiterating what you already knew.
I have a face for radio and a body for print. So, all right. And if you want to send us an email, btapodcast@gmail.com is the email address. So what we're going to do in this podcast, a little bit later here, we're going to begin our 30 teams – in less than 30-day season preview, where Steve and I take one team each from the Eastern and Western Conference and just give a look ahead. We're not going to get too in-depth, because essentially what you just want to know is who's new, why should we pay attention, why should I care, and if you're a fan of these teams, maybe what is the expectation, or in our opinion, what are going to be the goals for these teams? And we're going to start with...
Well, I can tell you what the goals of these two teams are tonight. Trash.
We're gonna start with the teams D-League. That finished with the worst record in each conference, respectively. And that would be the Philadelphia 76ers from the Eastern Conference and the Los Angeles Lakers from the Western Conference. Yeah.
I'm excited.
I can tell you're just bubbling over with pure passion and joy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now these guys would. I mean, these teams would be great in the NCAA tournament. I mean, this is your final. This is your championship match right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but before we get into that, Steve, let's go through just some different news. And just some different things that we kind of see happening during the first week of training camp. And let's start with a story that you sent to me last week. And it has to do with a new $100 man in the NBA. That would be the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis.
Hold on a second. A new $100 man? Do they give, like, budget cuts in the NBA that I didn't know about?
Well... No, he's a new one. I mean, they're giving away like candy. No, they're giving away like peppermint.
He's
the newest $100 man, is he not?
No. Listen to what you said. He's the new $100 man. Are you not missing a word in there?
Maybe million? Newest?
No. It maybe million needs to be in there? Newest,
wait a minute. What did I say?
You said the new $100 man.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Yeah. I'm about to say that's like the deal of the century.
Okay, the newest $100 million. No, let me rephrase that. My goodness, the newest. Look, because you keep interrupting me. Let me get it out. Even if it's wrong, let me get it out wrong. All right, the newest $100 million man now resides in Milwaukee, and his name is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo, yes.
The Greek freak.
Right.
Steve, the Milwaukee Bucks, big time winner in this deal. What are your initial thoughts on this re-signing and the terms, length of the contract?
Initially, I mean, it's great for them because, I mean, he could have gotten, basically, from my understanding, you know, a much better max deal right now in the interim. Now, here's the problem. I think it's like a 4-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. So by the time we're looking at the 21-22 season, if my math's correct, so 16-17, 17-18, 18-19. So, yeah, 19, well, the okay, so basically by the 19-20, it'd be 2021 season. By the 2021 season, he's gonna end up being owed a lot more money than that. But for right now, it's a pretty good deal. It's actually a really good deal based on what he probably could have signed on for. So, I love it for them in the short term. It's just in the long term, I'm not quite sure. You know, I think because he's coming off of his rookie deal, so I'm almost sure that, you know, the max he could have signed for was a 4-year deal coming off his rookie deal per the CBA. So. I'm almost positive that information is correct, but I could be wrong. In fact, let me think about this for a second. I think he could have actually signed for a 5th year coming off of his rookie contract. But in any case, other than missing on the 5th year and not getting the 5th year, in terms of the per dollar amount based on what he could have probably made, yeah, it's definitely a win for Milwaukee.
Well, okay, so yes, he was a part of the class of 2013.
Yeah.
That rookie class. He's only 21 years old. That right there in itself is staggering, because you got to imagine coming out of this 4-year deal at the age of 25. If he keeps projecting the way he is projecting and keep playing at the level that he is, mm-hmm. we can just continue to expect. I can't even imagine, you know, who knows where salaries will be in 4 years. I mean, God bless these young guys and what the NBA is turning out, but I can only imagine where he's going to be at in the salary range. But one of the things that I found interesting in the contract is the fact that C.J. McCollum had already previously signed.
Right, and he signed for 106.
In a 4-year extension. So it kind of set that bar already. Now, you know, in this article on ESPN, Insider.com from Kevin Pelton, he seems to imply that this sort of opens up a window for one Michael Carter Williams to sort of cash in on a big payday in the future as well. But I wonder, Steve, I ask you, will we even see Michael Carter Williams with the Bucks? I mean, they turned Giannis into a point guard.
He's a point forward.
Yeah, hearing the conversation that they are really strongly considering giving him more minutes and more time at this point forward position, you know, what is that going to do for Michael Carter Williams?
Well, I don't think they have long-term plans for him anyway. Him and Greg Monroe are like the guys on that roster that are not in the long-term plans with that franchise. Greg Monroe has proven after just a very short time there that he just does not work within that organization. Michael Carter Williams is not panning out in terms of what you would hope he would be and whatnot. You know, you got to worry about, you know, trying to sign Jabari Parker, depending on how he starts to play in your near future. You know, that could be the next guy that's up for a big contract in terms of your young talent. So, you know, logically, without having to end up paying some luxury tax to keep a Michael Carter Williams, a Greg Monroe, and you've got to pay, you know, Giannis, you know, I just don't see it being a possibility. So at the end of the day, I don't really see Michael Carter Williams being a big part of their plans anyway. So really, you know, it's not like he can shoot and slide over to the two or do anything from a wing position, because again, he's not a good shooter. So it's tough because, you know, Giannis is proving to be a guy that if he has the ball in his hands, he can make a lot of good things happen. So, you know, it's Michael Carter Williams is going to have the ball less in his hands, it looks like. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, he's got trade value. I mean, he's got the length and the size. I mean, he's that big point guard that is becoming, you know, oh so popular in the NBA in terms of, you know, height and length. So, you know, there's going to be some there's going to be some opportunity to either trade him. You know, Pelton does mention in his article that you referenced that if the Bucks and Adetokunbo had decided to hold off an extension and taking advantage of his small cap hold next summer, that might have forced Milwaukee to renounce the rights to Michael Carter Williams to clear additional space. So, in other words, he gets to at least be on the team still. But the bottom line is, if they continue to give more minutes to Adetokunbo at the one, what happens with Carter Williams? I don't know. Again, my gut tells me that he and Monroe aren't long-term in their plans anyway. So unless they can find a viable trade option, you know, I don't know what they do going forward with him. But that would probably be my guess, is that they look to trade MCW.
One other quick thing that came out of camp or the early media day from Milwaukee was Greg Monroe, and you mentioned him earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Greg Monroe reportedly has been told that he won't be a starter, that they'll look for him to come off the bench, mm-hmm. and that he seemed to be unhappy with it. Now,
what do you think? I mean, you got to think of it like this. I mean, the guy started, I'm pretty sure the last time he came off the bench was never. So,
Middle school, maybe.
Maybe if I mean, you got to figure these guys are big, you know, these guys
right.
are big
yeah,
these
yeah.
days. I'm seeing Acers
yeah.
are like 6'10", and it's like, Jesus, I hate you. Anyway, you know, I mean, the last time he probably came off the bench was never. So, yeah, I finally make it to the NBA, and I've joined this new team, and damn, just a season after I sign on with this team, I'm coming off the bench. Had I known that, you know, I might have made a wiser free agency signing.
Well,
a couple seasons
we
ago.
And you know what? I remember last year we talked about the Greg Monroe signing and how it did seem a little odd given the type of team that Milwaukee was the year before and what his sort of deficiencies were from an offensive perspective.
Sure.
Going into that season, coming out of Detroit. Here's what I think. I'm surprised that more guys don't think bigger picture here. And here's Greg Monroe. You're about to go be on the second unit, okay?
Right.
You're going to be probably the main scorer with the second unit. You're probably still going to get 25-something minutes a night. And you may not score – you may not have all-star-type numbers, but you probably will still average – if you're efficient and if you play like the starter that you're capable of, you will probably have – double-digit averages on most nights,
right.
And the team comes out better. You know, it's amazing, and apparently he was, from what I had heard, he was told about this during the offseason, but, you know, guys probably hear it. It's lip service. Well, this is what we're thinking, blah, 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 probably in one ear and out the other. Greg Monroe, you got to soak this stuff up, you know, soak it up, and you're on a good young team. I gotta feel like, hey, dude, make this work. The other point in Milwaukee is the injury to Chris Middleton, right?
Mm-hmm.
How's that gonna affect? How's that gonna affect? I mean, Chris Middleton, very very good serviceable player, not quite star level, but on that next tier. But, you know, a big difference maker for that team. And he's hurt. I don't recall what the length of the injury was and the time frame.
Hamstring
surgery.
It's,
yeah, okay. So that's a, you know, I'm not a doctor. I did stay
out
of Holiday Inn.
I'm trying to see if I can pull up a timetable here. We see Middleton suffered the injury during preseason workout on September 20th. Rehabilitation, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything that indicates that he'll come back. So, and this is for RealGM.com. Shame on RealGM.com for not putting.
Well, needless to say, Middleton won't be there for at least the first month, maybe the first 2 months of the season. Maybe definitely longer.
Yeah.
So it'll be.
Hold on a second. A timeline for return to basketball activity will be established at a later date. So this was published today. So
yeah, that's
clearly the team doctors are really sure. So yeah, who knows? It's you know, I imagine something like that would take some recovery time. So yeah, I'd say maybe a month or two in the season. Who knows?
Let's jump over to another story, another team, another bit of news that came out of this opening week. Mike D'Antoni, the new head coach for the Houston Rockets, has said he's going to turn over the point guard role to James Harden.
You mean to tell me he's not the actual point guard for that team anyway?
No, technically
he was not. You mean to tell me that Patrick Beverley was their actual point guard? Well, gee, shocker. No, listen, he's always been the point guard. It's like the person in the relationship that says, so what's our label? And the other person's like, do we really need one? And so my thing with this is, did we really need to label him as a point guard? He has the ball in his hands like 98.9995% of the time on offense anyway. Just saying.
Well, yeah, and there's a, you know, there's, I don't want to call it conflicting reports, but when you read something that when you read the coach Mike D'Antoni describing him being Harden as the point guard, but then they're saying, whoa, technically he's not really changing his position. Patrick Beverley is the point guard. I mean, like you just said, look, we know what it is. James Harden.
But think about this for a second. D'Antoni's going to want to run an up and down. I really think they're going to do that with Patrick Beverley, especially given that Patrick Beverley has missed a significant amount of games with seasons. Of course, you're talking about D'Antoni, who made his name in Phoenix playing with a guy named Steve Nash who could get up and down the floor. Do you really think he's going to want to bring his offensive style and turn the ball to Patrick Beverley and say, hey, Patrick, we want to play up and down the style. I think you're well equipped for that. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Well, I think what the conflict for some who heard D'Antoni state that Harden, you know, is going to be our point guard, instantly go to thinking that, okay, does this mean Harden is going to be guarding point guards? And I think that was what one of the conflicting reports, or at least what Houston tried to get out there to sort of control this and put a spin on it. And basically, now Patrick Beverley is still in the starting lineup, at least for now, until possibly Eric Gordon moves him out of that role. And then you have a backcourt of Eric Gordon and James Harden. You know, at that point, you know, maybe Gordon can guard the point guard or some point guards.
Eric Gordon, who's going to last all of 15 games. That's great.
Right. That's one of those things where we need, and as we do these season previews, we need to come up with a list of over-unders. And one of the over-unders, and I say over-unders on certain players or certain things, like over or under 50 games played by Eric Gordon this year. You know, something like that, you know.
Can we send Eric Gordon back to Indiana? Like, can we send him back to the University of Indiana? Because this whole, like, pro-level thing is just really – I don't want to say it's not working out, because obviously he's proven that he can shoot the ball to a certain degree that garnered him some nice numbers in terms of contract. But, you know, it's just – this whole NBA thing just ain't really kind of just – it's just not working. So,
well, look, he was in a bad situation in New Orleans.
Like, can we
sometimes
really?
You just need a change.
The man is injured all the time. So unless he's going down to Bourbon Street,
could
and
be
like,
the water.
Could be really. You're gonna bring up a water reference. You're gonna bring up a water reference about New Orleans. Really? Think about that.
Anyway, you just took it there. Okay.
I'm just saying. You gotta think about it before you say. Anyway,
no, I did not. I'm not going to think about it. That was not the you. Now that you mentioned it, it sounds insensitive.
I'm sorry, New Orleans.
My apologies for being insensitive.
Listen, stop watching Skip Bayless. He's the one. Let him make millions of dollars off of not thinking before he speaks. That's not your life. Leave that to the pros.
Am I coming through
okay? Because that was a really long pause.
Well, I was trying to find a way to transition off of it since you tried to shame me for just a quick reference, and you somehow tried to shame me into apologizing to the city of New Orleans for making a water reference. I was trying to find a way off the topic.
Yeah, I mean, you could have just said, you know, moving on. So anyway,
moving on.
Yeah, because that was really good right there. That just sounded all sorts of just mad and bitter.
Moving on to Kevin Garnett, Steve.
That was better.
Yeah. Kevin Garnett has been seen. There's this talk now of possibly Kevin Garnett being a coach and joining somebody's staff. Supposedly, the Cavs and Tyronn Lue have extended an open invitation to KG to join the Cavaliers staff. Then I see there are Instagram videos of KG at LA Clippers practice. Of course, he was there with Doc. Doc is, you know, obviously the coach of the Clippers, his former coach. All of this makes it, and I don't know how long it'll be before we start wondering, okay, what's the real reason why KG didn't want to play one more year in Minnesota, where Thibodeau, who, you know, was basically, you know, was his coach, his defensive coach in Boston the year they won the title. I don't know how many years, how long after, or I guess the better question is, how many years was Thibodeau the coach in Boston with KG? Was it just that one title season before he moved to Chicago, or was it the next year? Do you recall?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I got to believe he was there for more than one season.
It was either, okay, so let's just, it's safe to assume probably one or two seasons in which Thibodeau was with KG in Boston. Safe to say Max was probably two years.
With KG. Got you.
Right, with KG in Boston.
Yeah, I would say that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to go back and think, when did Thibodeau become the head coach of the Bulls?
Oh, I'm looking that up now. Continue.
So, continuing with the thought, if KG's in Minnesota...
Just real quick, so 2007 to 2010, he was an associate head coach with Boston. 2010 to 2015, he was with Chicago. Moving on.
Oh, so neat. That's more than two seasons. So it's about a good three seasons there.
So here's me starting
the speculation, wondering. KG's leaving. He's leaving Minnesota. Why doesn't he want to be a part of the Minnesota organization that Tom Thibodeau is running now?
Well,
why start venturing off into other places? Cleveland, maybe.
I mean, well, here's the Clippers. You know, the thing about it is, you know, if you know, God rest his soul, Flip Saunders was still around, I'm pretty sure that would have been a strong possibility. But, you know, maybe KG looks at it and says, you know, maybe there's just not the same incentive for me to be here. You know, I don't have the same relationship with Tibbs as I do with, or I did with, Flip Saunders. And I'd rather consider other options. I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't want to speculate on anything, but, you know, I don't want to sit here and be the guy, or us be the guys that say, well, there must have been something wrong in Minnesota. I don't think so. I mean, who knows? I mean, who knows how long he's even thought about the idea of being being an assistant coach or even a consultant at an NBA level. I mean, you know, he's played 21 years in the league, so, you know, is there really that need to, like, jump back into the NBA right away? I don't know. Maybe he just wants to take some time to breathe, figure out his next options, figure what's out there for him, and see what it is.
All right. Moving on to another story. Another interesting story coming out. This is reported by Jeff Zilgit of USA Today. And he says that as of Thursday, the NBA has passed a rule that will allow teams to, quote, review and cut video for immediate access, transfer video between bench personnel and the locker rooms, and access data rather than have that info delivered from the video room to the bench. He notes that the NBA previously allowed teams to cut their video and deliver it to the bench, but it doesn't seem like there was any real-time file sharing, which now will be in place. I'm curious, Steve. What's your thought on, unlike other sports, and I'm going to say unlike football, where the action is a little bit slower.
Sure.
Basketball is a constantly moving, flowing game.
Yeah.
I can't imagine trying to analyze film in the middle of the game. I mean, how?
No,
I'm trying to think as a coach.
When you're saying film, it's not like they're breaking down an entire quarter. They might just be looking at, you know, clips of a defensive set, an offensive set, something where they can get a better grasp of how to adjust.
Well, okay, but still, let's use as an example one of the sites that you and I both like to watch, and that's I think it's Basketball Breakdown, right? BB Breakdown.
Yeah, right. Basketball
okay.
Breakdown. Yeah. Down
and
by Coach Nick.
They do a right, Coach Nick. He does a great job of splicing together plays and different philosophies, but
sure.
that rarely is happening on the fly. Now, you know, he's not an NBA franchise with a couple of guys.
But,
he's breaking that stuff down.
Truth be told, he has the capability of being able to put out like up to the second, up to the minute, like vine posts of, hey, look at this play. And he does it during games.
Okay.
Like he'll So I mean, even he does it to a degree. I mean, so if he can do it, you gotta remember, like there's websites out there like now like Synergy where you can get game film to access the game film that leagues all over the world. Everything from AAU all the way up to like, you know, international pro leagues across overseas. I'm still trying to figure out a way to get access into all that because you know, you have to be a coach or, you know, have that kind of access to be able to get in. I got a couple of friends who do have that access, and I'm still trying to get a login and password so I can start poking around there because I'm pretty sure I'd never stop watching Synergy. So it's probably a good thing that nobody ever gives me access, but the minute I get access, it's over.
Okay,
but there are websites out there like that do that.
So essentially, what I foresee now, something that you may have seen in the first quarter or second quarter, you're able to be able to reference third, fourth quarter. Here's what I envision. I envision fourth quarters that already are long because of the timeouts and the instant replay timeout, and every time there's a ball that goes off of so-and-so's hands, we have to go look at it for 90 seconds. I can completely see coaches going to their iPads during these 60, 90-second timeouts and breaking down, hey, guys, here's a potential set that we need to be paying attention to. Can you foresee that happening, and how do you think that's going to change the game? Do you feel it'll change the game in a positive way?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's if you have the tools to be able to, up to the second or up to the minute, analyze, it allows for teams, again, like I said, to be able to adjust, and, you know, it just adds that extra wrinkle of strategery to the game. So,
what's that word?
Strategery. Isn't that a word?
Okay.
Anyway, don't question me. You know what the hell I was trying to say. Hold on a second.
That was payback for trying to shame me about my water.
The word strategery was coined for a Saturday Night Live sketch written by James Downey, airing October 7, 2000, which satirized the performances of George W. Bush and Al Gore, two candidates. Okay, so great. Now me using that fucking word is being put alongside those two numbnuts. All right, so obviously it's not exactly the best word I could have used. But anyway.
That's all right, though.
You're an ass. Anyhow.
Yeah.
So.
Payback. Payback.
Yeah, okay. You got me. Now, but it does add that extra element to be able to, you know, strategize during games. You made me have to think about that before I even said it.
I did. One final note, and then we can kind of get into our previews unless you've got a couple other stories. I was going to mention Paul Pierce and Paul Pierce's announcement. I didn't want to do this last episode because that one was, you know, in sort of propping up KG. But also, I think right about the same time that Kevin Garnett announced he was not coming back, Paul Pierce announced that this will be his final season.
Yep.
Final season in the NBA. He'll finish it out with the Clippers. I'm not going to go so far and ask you, is Paul Pierce a Hall of Famer? Because I think you've answered that question as a yes. And I kind of agree with you that he is a Hall of Famer. Are we both in agreement that he is a Hall of Famer?
I'm definitely in agreement. You said kind of in agreement. What
okay,
is,
so we are emphatically in agreement that he is a Hall of Famer.
All right, then. There we go. I like that. When you say it with your chest. When you're going to say it, say it.
My question to you then, Steve, my question to you would then be, what is Paul Pierce's signature moment? I don't know if he has one.
I don't really think about guys in terms of just moments. I look at the totality of a career and make a decision off of, you know, how impactful they were, how good at their position they were. Did they, you know, redefine or did they revolutionize their position? I mean, I don't really look and say, oh, there was this one game. Look, Paul Pierce.
When they run the video clip, when they run the video montage of why we remember and love Paul Pierce. Or why we loved Paul Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
What are those highlights going to look like? What is the video montage? Because there were many
I'm on YouTube right now, and they've got like five different like Paul Pierce top 10 plays of his career. So if you want to know what it looks like, just pop over to YouTube.
I'm not asking YouTube. I'm asking you. I'm asking you and your recollection.
I don't. Think about it in those terms. I don't think about it in those
terms.
Don't stop.
Don't be like that. Don't.
I don't.
Okay, just say you don't.
Really
just
don't.
Say you don't have one. Just say you don't have one.
I don't chronicle people's best plays in my head. Do certain plays in NBA history stick out in my head? Sure. Has he made any of them that are readily popping to mind? No, but that's unfair to
him. Well, no, that's not being unfair. I just think that's a legitimate. You know,
how about I just say it like this? He's a hell of
a
player.
Great player.
He's a hell of a player.
Okay, but he's this is why I say this, and I'm going to bring this point. I'm going to try to bring it home for you.
Sure.
This is why some guys instantly get into the Hall of Fame, and other guys who are Hall of Fame worthy. End up taking years to get into the Hall of Fame.
Paul Pierce should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No, come on, stop it.
Yeah, but okay.
Stop
okay. Let me test this out.
I mean, it depends on who he's in the class with.
Let me test this out because we've talked about this already. If I put Paul Pierce on the list for next year's class, does he not get in? Yes or no? I say he gets in, no question. And he's a headliner for next year, too.
No.
Who? Oh, so, okay. They had 10 people go in for the 2016 Hall of Fame. Look at the 2017 list that's being projected and tell me Paul Pierce isn't a top 10 amongst those people.
You want me to find? Okay, so.
Go get it.
Next podcast.
No, do it on this podcast. We're talking.
No, I can't do it on this podcast.
All you got to do is look up the list for the. I'll do it for you. I'll do it for you. Keep yammering, keep bearing yourself, and I'll get the list. The 2017 NBA Hall of Fame, what is it, nominees? Yeah, nominees. There we go. That's
the
word.
I'll tell you exactly where I saw the list, basketballreference.com.
I got it right here. I'm on it. I'm ready. Don't worry about it. Buck Williams, dude, like, there's 191 players. Now, here are the top ranking players. Oh, hold on a second. Players eligible for Hall of Fame been retired for at least 4 years. Only players 150. Okay. So now I know you got the win share thing from the other night. I see that now. All right. So I'm just going to give you some names here, and you're going to tell me if they should get in over Paul Pierce. Right now.
This is a name game. Now, hold on. This is a bit of a name game you're giving me. So this is right now going into.
Hold on a second. Because there was an actual list somewhere. It wasn't on Basketball Reference. There was an actual. Because I remember you saying to me Chris Webber, and I remember reading that Chris Webber was being talked about. And let me just say this for the record. If Chris Webber is being talked about as a headliner for next year, I damn sure know Paul Pierce would definitely make next year's class. Definitely, because Paul Pierce's career stacked up against, you know, Chris Webber is very comparable, and to me it's better, number one, because he's at least got titles next to his name. Now, moving forward, let me see.
2017 Hall of Fame candidates. I've got the list right here in front of me.
Please then give it to me. And I'll read off the names, and what we'll do is read off each name. You'll tell me if Paul Pierce would be over that particular person, and I'll tell you if I think they should be over that particular person.
Okay. Am I going off win share, or can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Pull up Paul Pierce's stats.
You
got to be able to give me the comparison. We've got to be able to have the comparison, right?
Go ahead.
You're the one that wanted to do this right at this moment
what I'm telling you is my general statement here is he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and now he may not be for every class. He may, like, for 2016. He probably wouldn't have been a first ballot Hall. If this was his first year eligible, he probably wouldn't have made it. Now, 2017,
okay.
Though, based on some of the names I've seen thrown around for next year, he'd make next year.
Paul Pierce or Chris Webber?
I'm taking Paul Pierce. I just said that. That's not to slight Chris Webber in any way, by the way. I think Chris Webber should be able to get in. It's not. But I honestly think that totality of career-wise, I'll take Paul Pierce.
Paul Pierce or George McGinnis? This is why I asked you to pull up that info on Paul Pierce, because I would tell you George McGinnis, who averaged 20.2 points a game and 11 rebounds during his NBA career, during his playing career. That's NBA and ABA.
And listen, Paul Pierce averaged 20, 25, and 4.
His entire career? What? That's his career average?
Yes. Career average.
No.
I'm looking at McGinnis right now. Yes, I'm looking at it right now on Basketball Reference. His is 20 points, 5 rebounds, and like 3.6 assists.
Okay, what's the win share?
Win share is 149.9. PER is 19.8. Shot 80% from the free throw line. Go ahead.
Wait a minute. His win share or his win share per 48 minutes. Which one are you looking at?
I'm looking at the career stats it gives me at the very top. So if you want me to go get it like as a more of a broken down number, or
so you're
or,
telling
or
me his
happens.
Win share is what now?
Based on what Basketball Reference is showing me, saying at the very top, win share it's showing 149.9.
Does it have the win share per 48?
That's what I'm looking for. Hold on a second.
All right. If you're telling me his win share is 149, then, I mean, that's a bigger win share than anyone on the 2017 list.
Yeah. Ooh, you think? Shit. I mean, really. Look, here's okay. Way up for 40 minutes over his career. Career 0.158. What is McGinnis's?
McGinnis's win share 0.127. Win share over 48.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You said what was Pierce's again?
0.158.
All right.
And look, what's unfair to guys who play. First of all, to be fair to guys who played back in, you know, 60s, 70s, even 80s, that's not me being a millennial and saying, I'm not a millennial, thank God. But regardless, that's not me sitting up here being like, well, that's the guy I'm familiar with. Look, at the end of the day, George McGinnis deserves to get in the Hall of Fame. But
I want to pick
one over the other.
I feel like we have strayed in the conversation and what I wanted to bring up in this conversation with you. I was simply wanting to illustrate a point that while we both agree that Paul Pierce is a Hall of Famer, I was simply wanting to point out that Paul Pierce's signature moments are on a different scale than, say, an Iverson, a Shaq.
That's hold on a second. That's because the minute you hear Allen Iverson, you think of him stepping over Tyronn Lue, and you think of him crossing over Michael Jordan, or you think of him talking about practice. Those are the three that come to everybody's mind.
Okay, so what are the first? Okay, so my point: what are the first three things that you think of with Paul Pierce?
I don't have. That's the thing. I'm not sitting here worrying about highlights.
I'm not asking
Pierce,
you. If you're
but you
worried
know what?
About
though, let me ask you this. Who had a better career between the two of them? Iverson and Paul Pierce. Between Allen Iverson and Paul Pierce. Now, in terms of maybe overall individual stats and people being wowed by ball handling and bad shooting, sure. You'd sit there and, oh, great, yeah, Allen Iverson's a better player. All right, cool. But
what are we comparing here, Steve?
I'm just saying to you that every year guys get in based on who is up for being able to get in. If you put Paul Pierce up against the guys who got in this year, the guys and women, all respect to Cheryl Swoops, he may not have gotten in. This was a loaded class. Now, next year, he gets in, no question. Listen, if the best guy you can come to me with are guys like George McGinnis and Chris Webber.
But hold on. Let me pause you for a second. Steve, my point about Iverson and Shaq, any year in which they're in the Hall of Fame list, I mean, short of a year that includes, you know, Mikan, Russell, you know, Bird. I mean, but realistically,
guys who are already in.
Yeah. any year in which their name is on the list, they're in.
Okay.
All I'm saying is, like you just pointed out, there are years where Paul Pierce is for sure in, and then there's years where Paul Pierce will get in, but just not this year. That's all I'm saying. And don't take offense to my point that I'm trying to bring up. All I did was, once again, and I want to move forward because we've taken a lot of time. I thought this would be an interesting discussion. Of just to bring up to say what's Paul Pierce's signature moments, and maybe we can have that discussion where we actually can answer it, or you can answer it. Maybe you have already answered it. I don't know, but I didn't expect it to go this long because I wanted to get into our previews. But I once again, I have no.
Hold on a second. if we're talking about like signature moments, what's Yao Ming's signature moment? You know why he gets
well,
in right
no,
away?
That's a good
you,
point.
You know why,
that's a good point.
You know why he gets in? But hold on a second. Hold on a second. Do you know why he gets in right away? Because he helped open up an entire market for the NBA, which is not easy to do, number one. Number two, to have it on the backs of one player is impressive.
I don't
and number
disagree.
Three, and number three, as you pointed out in our last podcast, plays eight seasons, is an all-star eight each season. But
I don't disagree.
If we're just talking about a signature moment or moments, even he, you'd struggle to think of moments for him too. But yet, he's got certain things that are able to define him and what he was able to do for the game. So is he lit in because he's a great player? I think it's because of the simple fact he had a great impact on the game. And I don't disagree. All right then. So, but at the end of the day,
it's funny you bring that up because I was going to make that point. I was going to go exactly where you just went about but I was going to do it in a way of saying there's a, almost like a tier among Hall of Famers where an Iverson and Shaq would be on one tier and Yao Ming and Paul Pierce would be on another tier. That's all. I was just going to bring it up in that respect.
I don't know. The way I look at it like, is like this. I also think Iverson, because of his popularity and the way this generation has gravitated towards him, he also has a profound effect. Some of it, can be looked at negatively. Some of it can be looked at as game-changing. But his impact in terms of how he's impacted the game and how people view him is also a big part of – so in other words, a guy
on
like Paul
off
Pierce,
the court. The
well,
same
yeah,
way –
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Right. And so Paul Pierce doesn't necessarily have that. But,
right.
But that's not – that's not
but
to
even
me,
on the
which
court,
should define him as a first-ballot Hall of Famer or not. He's a hell of a player regardless.
I really would like to – I don't know if you'll let me make this point without this being the last thing. I'm not wanting this to be the last word, but it just popped into my head. When I think of signature moments, here's a good comparison, okay? These two players both appeared in, Paul Pierce was in how many NBA Finals? Two. Okay, so this isn't exactly fair, but Paul Pierce has won an NBA Finals. He's been in another. Okay. I was going to compare somebody like Reggie Miller and Paul Pierce from the standpoint of here's two guys who are Hall of Famers. Okay. But when it comes to signature moments, the number of signature moments that you think of when you think of Reggie Miller, triple the quote-unquote signature moments that you think of Paul Pierce. Now, I say that to not – I don't
–
hold on. I don't say that to make Paul Pierce be on any less of a tier than Reggie Miller. But
Paul Pierce is a better player than Reggie Miller. I'm sorry.
See, I'm not at all. There you go.
He's a better player.
That's another discussion. I mean, we'll agree to disagree on that one.
He's a better player. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Now, in
terms
of clutch shooting, Paul Pierce, he was a great shooter.
So you're breaking up.
Slow down.
Say that again because you broke up. You were breaking up. Your signal was breaking up a little bit. Say that again.
Okay. Now, what you remember moments-wise of Reggie Miller all have to do with his excellent clutch shooting against teams like the Knicks, against teams like the Bulls, and so on and so forth.
His playoff performances, yes.
Okay, but I will argue to that. Paul Pierce was also a good clutch shooter, probably underrated, and by and large, his numbers in terms of across the board – it's not like I'm sitting here looking at a guy who didn't have impact, couldn't shoot, and was just, Paul Pierce, late into his career, could still go out and get you buckets. So, at the end of the day, if Reggie's game was predicated on playing in the perimeter, so Paul Pierce could play at all three levels of the floor and finish. So, to me, I'll take Paul Pierce, especially in today's game. I'll take a guy who's 6'7", 235, and can take a hit over a guy who I need to hope that he's going to, you know, continue to knock down shots all the time, which he did at a high rate for a long time.
Come on. Come on.
But the bottom line is, I'll take Paul Pierce, you know.
You really get your – okay.
I would. Now,
okay.
If you flip the scenario and said, well, who do you want taking a last shot? I think we both know what the hell that answer is.
You say it.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah, you say
you
it
really,
since you're all in on Paul Pierce.
You really think – no, I said a last shot. Who do I want shooting it?
Who, Steve?
Of
who do you
course
want?
I want it to be Reggie.
Okay.
But that doesn't make him the better player. That just makes him the better shooter. So what? There are a lot of guys. Okay, so I should take Kyle Korver over Paul Pierce because he's a better shooter? Really? Man, hell no, I ain't taking
Kyle
Korver.
Bad comparison, but if that's what you want to use
just
to
saying,
lean on.
Kyle Korver, but Kyle Korver is also a hell of a shooter. I'm just saying. I'm not comparing the two. I'm just simply saying that I'm not going to just take a guy simply because he can shoot.
The question wasn't about being the better shooter. It was about who you give the ball to at the end of a game. And you just said Reggie Miller over Paul Pierce.
In my head, I'm thinking a clutch shot in terms of three-pointer. I'm taking Reggie.
Oh, but if it's a drive to the basket, huh? What? Like, that's just going to be free. They're giving that away like candy.
Hold on a second. Who do you feel better about taking a drive to the basket, being able to take a bump if needed? Paul Pierce in his prime, who was athletic and can take a hit and finish, or you want frail-ass Reggie Miller?
Who
really
got to the free throw line how many times on those – being frail?
Understood.
Come on.
I
understand you may not have seen a lot of film or watched a lot of games with Reggie in his prime.
Stop it. Stop your madness. Anyway, stop it. Anyhow, look, I'm not understating how good of a player Reggie Miller was. I'm just simply saying to you, you give me Paul Pierce. I'll take Paul in his prime against Reggie in his prime. I'll take him. Hell, I get the bigger guy. I get the more physical guy. Neither one of them are going to talk each other out of their game because they both run their mouth. And hell, if it breaks out into a fight, I'm damn sure taking Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce from Oakland. I'm not going to take some kid that was getting his ass kicked by his sister when he was a kid.
Do you know where? Oh Lord. Okay. All right. I'm gonna choose so that we can continue moving forward to step away and let that be the last word.
Hey, listen. Paul Pierce wasn't known for his sister being great.
Wow. All right, Steve, can we get ready to transition into our NBA Prison 30 and 30?
Yeah, let's do that. We'll go from talking about NBA greats to talking about NBA ugh.
Here we are with our NBA preseason 30 teams in less
even
than
Reggie's
30.
Even Reggie's career stats were worse than his. Jesus.
Can I set this up so that we can slice this out cleanly? Can I do it again? Without the Reggie Miller insert from a previous tape.
Even his career stats don't even. Never mind. Let's move on.
You let me. Are you sure? Are we sure? Can I get this off cleanly?
I'm positive. The only thing that he beats out outright.
For editing purposes.
Out,
are we still talking
the
about?
The only thing that he.
About out,
I'm just letting you know. The only thing he outright beats Paul Pierce in.
No,
because
I. No, because.
Is free throw shooting. Outright just bullies him. But everything else, you'd be surprised. His three-point career shooting is just under 40%, 39.5. Paul Pierce was 36.5. Think about it.
For another discussion, we will bring back the Paul Pierce versus the field debate.
God.
Can we move forward? I'm just waiting on you because this can't happen until you're ready to let me move forward.
I'm good. I just I'm like a dog with a bone. Once I get it,
I can put you on mute so I can get this out and then we can cleanly move forward into this. You tell me, sir.
You do whatever you gotta do. I'm good.
We start with our NBA preseason, 30 teams in less than 30 days. And we're going to start with the worst teams from the Eastern Conference and Western Conference. From the Eastern Conference, that team would be the Philadelphia 76ers, who finished last season with a record of 10-72. And the Western Conference would be the LA Lakers, who finished with a record of 17-65. So what we'll do from here, I'll start with the 76ers, and then Steve will follow in, or we'll talk about the 76ers for a little bit, and then Steve will transition over into the Los Angeles Lakers. So the Philadelphia 76ers, what do you need to know? And I broke it down like this. Who's in? Who's new? Ben Simmons, the number one pick of the 2016 draft, is in. Also in this year, Joel Embiid, the 2014 draft pick for the 76ers, as well as Dario Saric, 2014 draft pick as well. Also joining this year's 76ers team, you've got Jared Bayless, Gerald Henderson, Sergio Rodriguez, and most importantly, probably, in this whole new-look 76ers regime, is Brian Colangelo, who takes over for Sam Hinkie. Sam Hinkie, the previous GM, he's out. Who trusts the process? That concept is out. And it's kind of interesting that here the 76ers are with players like Bayless and Henderson, possibly Elton Brand, guys that probably would not have been part of this team under Sam Hinkie's trust the process, rebuild with young guys and draft picks model. But I think after consecutive years in which the Sixers, I think 9 wins 2 years ago, 10 wins this past year, I think the league, the Philadelphia fan base had lost all enthusiasm for the process. And Hinkie was out. So, as the 76ers go into this season, here's some of the storylines, Steve, that I find most interesting, you know, just to kind of consider, to look at, and to wonder what you're going to get from the 76ers. Mm-hmm. The first storyline for you, Steve, who are the 76ers building around? Is it Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid? Is it Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, and Dario Saric? Is it Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor? Or is it some other combination of Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and insert the next player? Who are the 76ers building around, Steve?
They have to build a team first, meaning they got a bunch of young pieces that are talented individually, but there's not a team in place. So there's nobody to identify just yet as to who they're building around, because at the end of the day, you don't know what you're going to get
Embiid, sorry.
Embiid,
Simmons.
There we go. You don't know what you're going to get out of Joel Embiid just yet at the NBA level. I don't care what Drew Hanlon puts out in terms of a video of him basically playing, you know, Matador defense against a kid who's, you know, of his size and mobility. You don't know what you're going to get out of him. Guys, Nerlens Noel could be very well on the trade block. Jahlil Okafor has proven that, you know, he can be a little bit of an off-court question. Can he lead? It's only going to be his second year in the league. I mean, and Dario Saric, this is his rookie year. Ben Simmons, you know, from having watched him as long as I've watched him, you know, he'll be a guy that finally will have talent around him in terms of you know, he wants to be able to facilitate, get others involved. He'll have, you know, an NBA roster around him. Not one of the better rosters, but a lot of intriguing young talent. So he might be able to come in and be, like, you know, their team's best playmaker. But how much of a scorer, rebounder is he really going to be, more so than a playmaker for others? I don't know. So there's a lot of questions until you really start to see how the rotations come together and how these guys mesh over the course of the season, because they're all relatively new pieces. Joel Embiid is basically brand new in terms of the minute he steps on the court. There's no chemistry there with him and Okafor or anybody else in that roster. So you add him, Simmons, and Sarkic. That's three brand new pieces. And if they start all three of them, you know, that's three of your five guys that are brand new to the team. So, you know, it's, I can't imagine all three of those guys will start. I got to imagine that, you know, Okafor and Nerlens Noel will probably be your 4 or 5. But then again, you know, if they do decide to run like point forward with Ben Simmons, do they do that as a part of their starting lineup, or do they try to, you know, experiment him as a wing? He's not good enough to be a wing shooter. So I can't see that being the case. There's just not a, there's not, there's a lot of great pieces here. It's just not a team. So who you're building around is unclear until you start to see how the chemistry of this team starts to come together and who ends up being, you know, kind of that lineup or the lineups in the rotation that you can clearly start to see who are the guys that in these situations or in this lineup, they're going to be a go-to guy. There's a lot of questions here.
Right. Okay. So that transitions me into my second storyline. Is the front court too crowded? You obviously have brought up one of the key and big questions, whereas you have, you know, a Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, Jahlil Okafor. Obviously, last year was the first year that Noel, Okafor played together. Never really looked fluid with both of them on the floor. Okafor did average 17 points, 17 and a half points, I believe was the number, 17 and a half. And 7 rebounds, but he also didn't finish the season. Then you had Nerlens Noel, who was an 11 points per game, 8.1 rebounds. And so now you throw in Embiid. And so obviously the you know, everyone is saying, once you add in a Ben Simmons and a Dario Saric, everyone who has an opinion worth anything that doesn't matter to the folks in Philadelphia seems to think that you can't keep all these guys together. Now, it's already sort of been thrown out there that you're looking at a potential starting lineup that would consist of a front court of Simmons, Noel, and possibly a three-guard backcourt of Jared Bayless, Nick Stauskas, and Gerald Henderson.
That's just one
projected lineup.
There's no way in hell Jahlil Okafor is not starting for them. There's no way.
I disagree. I think there is a way Okafor doesn't start.
I'm not saying that eventually if they start to figure out their team and what they have and how those pieces and parts mesh, I'm not saying that they couldn't discover that, hey, you know what? A healthy Joel Embiid is the kind of prospect that we were hoping he'd be. And you know what? We might want him to start at our 5 spot compared to Jahlil Okafor. But, I mean, he's coming off a 17-7 season. There's only been, I think, according to what I'm reading here on Basketball Insiders, there's only been 5 players in history that have been able to come out of the gate and do that from his positions. I mean, not from his position, but as a rookie. So, and shooting above 50% from the floor. So I don't think you automatically take that sort of production and upside and say, well, he's not going to start for us. Now, if he becomes an off-court issue and other guys start to get more minutes, whoever it is that comes off the bench, and they outperform him, then sure, I could certainly see that. But to start the year, I highly doubt it.
Well, there's a strong likelihood that at least one guy is coming off the bench.
Oh, no.
And possibly maybe two of them.
Oh, yeah.
And
No doubt.
So with that statement about this storyline being that the front court's too crowded, I don't disagree that it's too crowded because you're not going to have all of them on the floor at the same time. Probably not. I mean, who knows what Brett Brown might do, but it doesn't logically make sense.
No.
But nothing in Philadelphia has logically made sense over the last few seasons anyway. So who knows?
Correct.
Third storyline. Can the Sixers take the first step in the right direction toward building a winning team culture? And you just brought up a key point in that here's a bunch of guys who haven't played together. Here, I mean, I just named off some of the rookies, but think of the number of new players on this team. You know, outside of those rookies, you've got a Sergio Rodriguez new to this team. Gerald Henderson, new to this team. Jared Bayless, new to this team. I mean, your returning players from last year are Nick Stauskas, Nerlens Noel, T.J. McConnell, and Robert Covington. And I'm just speaking of the 9 to 10 guys who are most likely to get minutes early.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the 4 returners. So how this team builds itself in how they deal with losing, but how they deal with playing together and building a winning culture and a winning mindset is really going to be interesting. And it's going to be one of those things that this is coach speak I'm about to give you right now. Winning quarters is going to mean more than winning games. Seems odd to say that.
Well,
but
I mean,
when you're a young team, winning quarters is going to be more important because you're probably not going to win a lot of ball games.
There's going to be a lot of moral victories, in other words, in Philadelphia, and there has to be a. But,
see, I don't like using that word. That's why I go to the winning quarters.
But what it boils down to is that you're going to look for a mesh in culture, a mesh in chemistry. That slowly starts to create a culture within Philadelphia, but they're so far away from even establishing a culture, a day-to-day step in the building. This is how we act. This is what we do. This is our culture. That right now, all you can really worry about is how can we get these guys to be better? How can we get them to mesh to where we can make day-to-day progress? And then we can worry about, you know, stringing together and winning games consecutively and this and that and whatnot. But listen, they're going to finish more than likely last in the Atlantic. So this is not going to be an overly productive season, you know, unless somehow Brooklyn just craps the bed and plays absolutely atrocious, and then maybe Philadelphia finishes 4th in the Atlantic Division. But outside of that, possibility that there's a team in their division that will be worse off than them. The bottom line boils down to is that you know, it's going to be trying to at least figure out what do we have, because
right. Well, that's why I said the main question is taking those first steps, and you talked about things that they're going to have to do. It is literally. How do we act when we come in the building? What do we do during our free time at the beginning and before practice? What do we do at the end of practice? All of those little things that winning teams do, these guys have to be able to take those first steps.
All I know is keep Joel Embiid away from the Shirley Temples. That's all I know.
My last storyline, Steve, on the 76ers, will Brett Brown make it to the end of the season and next year?
Who the hell wants to coach that? Who the hell wants to coach that team other than him right now? Who?
You know what? I disagree. When I look at the young look, be realistic. When you look at the young talent, and if you're the kind of person that can see 3 to 5 years down the road, this is an intriguing group to work with. But you got to be one of those people who can see that far ahead. And so I bring that up to say, Brian Colangelo and Brett Brown are building a relationship just like, you know, these new players are. And they have to be on a similar page because this is the beginning of whatever you think the Sixers can be in 3 to 5 years, this is the beginning. And so I wonder if things start poorly, like they have traditionally done for the Sixers the last few years, will Brett Brown make it to the end of the season? And even if they make it to the end of the season, will he be around next year?
I mean, look, here, again,
I'm just giving you storylines, Steve.
I don't know how many coaches are going to want to sign up for that, number one. Number two,
only 30 NBA jobs. Somebody will sign up for it.
I understand that. But I'm saying at the end of the day, yeah, you'll get somebody, but is this going to be the right person for a franchise going forward? Every time you bring in a new head coach, you're bringing in the possibility of a new offense, new philosophy, possibly even a new culture. That coach has got to figure out who is going to mesh within the lineups that they kind of envision. So every time you mess with the recipe, you have to almost start over. So it's like if you have a Brett Brown in who's actually saying the right things and seems to be really enthusiastic about the direction of the team and going forward with the team, you can't just look at it and say, well, you know what, at the end of the season, we didn't play very well. Yeah, you didn't play very well. We all knew that. We expect that. Now, if we get 3-4 seasons in and they still look like they do this year, yeah, we need to have a conversation.
All right. I'm going to leave you with my goals, Steve. These are my goals for the 76ers. Goal number one for the 76ers, win 20-plus games. The Vegas over-under is 27.5. The 76ers have to win 20 or more games. Number two, have no significant injuries to Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, or Jahlil Okafor. And goal number three, find out which three or four guys you want to build around and then move all the others next offseason.
Steve, you want them to collect all them assets and then start unloading some of them.
They're just my personal – those are my goals for the 76ers. My prediction – the 76ers will win 24 wins this year. 22 to 24 games this year.
You got to figure.
That's my prediction for the 76ers.
You got to figure. Jahlil Okafor could play as kind of like a 4-5, sort of. He's probably better. He's better suited to be a 5, let's just be honest. But I don't think if I had to pick an odd man out, I would think the odd man out is Nerlens Noel. That's just what my gut would tell me. Now, does Nerlens Noel not bring value? Of course he does. I mean, with his athleticism and length and ability to block shots and rebound, and, you know, he's a capable scorer and doing some good things offensively to a degree. But to me, I think it's a little more clear as to what his upside could be in the NBA. Whereas the upside of a Jahlil Okafor, who had a great starting season, at least when he was on the court, and then you think about what the possibilities for a Ben Simmons could be and a Jahlil Okafor, I think those are the three guys that you probably are looking at and saying, yeah, those are probably the three guys that we really hope work out. And then it becomes, now how do we mesh them together and who plays what position? Because at the end of the day, two of those guys are power forwards. Two of those guys are centers. One's a power forward in Ben Simmons. You can't put, first of all, Ben Simmons hasn't been able to show a good enough jump shot. Now, I will contest for him that he's a better shooter than people realize, and I think he'll be able to play that forward position over time and be able to shoot that 15 to 18 foot jumper that you would want your your fours to be able to shoot in order to space out the floor for your five. But once he kind of takes over the four, it becomes who's at that five position that we really want going forward. And that's going to be the key to figure that out.
All right. Now, Steve, I turn it over to you. And the Los Angeles Lakers, once again, finished last season with a 17-65 record.
Yeah, for me, the way I look at it is where this team begins and ends is going to be, for me, primarily in their backcourt. I think, you know, when you look at Clarkson, you look at D'Angelo Russell, that's where their scoring and their playmaking is going to come from, at least initially. I don't think you're going to get a ton out of Brandon Ingram. You're going to see the flashes, but you're going to see a lot of, you know, needing to build up to being a wing. I think people are going to make those Kevin Durant comparisons or want to, and that's unfair, and he's just not there yet. You add pieces like Luol Deng into the mix, who's going to be able to play some three for you. Larry Nance Jr. proved to be a good player for them last year, a key role player. Julius Randle, I mean, you know, in terms of the roster itself, outside of the two guys I named in Russell and Clarkson, you know, you could argue that right now, as things are, he's that third kind of piece for them. But to be quite clear, you know, I don't necessarily – I see him as a guy that can produce in terms of points and rebounds to a degree, but defensively – his ability to pass and other little things, I'm not overly sold on him as a four in the NBA. So how much of a piece going forward is he? I don't know. To me, with the way that this lineup is right now, there's not a clear – this is our guy. I think Clarkson's probably the closest thing in terms of production and just overall upside and value. And then right after that, you're hoping that either Russell or either Russell or maybe even Luol Deng. I'm not really. That didn't even feel right coming out of my mouth to say Luol Deng to be that next kind of tier guy, but maybe. I don't know. To me, this whole lineup right here is, you know, I don't know exactly how this pans out in terms of being able to put together a consistent enough roster to. You know, what are the goals? The goals here have got to be similar to what Philadelphia. One, figure out what our rotations are going to be and how we're going to play. Two, develop more of that chemistry that at least they've had the chance to do aside from what Philadelphia's been able to do. But I think overall, you're looking at hoping that D'Angelo Russell shows improvement as your point guard. Clarkson continues to develop as your two. And then from there, it's kind of a crapshoot. How well does Julius Randle play at both ends becomes the question. What does Luol Deng contribute? What are the reasonable goals and expectations for Brandon Ingram that give you the assurance over the course of the season that, you know, he's going to be a contributor within the next 2 to 3 years. You know, these are some of the things that you're kind of looking for. So, I don't know. For me, I didn't feel great about a lot of the signings necessarily that they had with Deng, Mozgov, and I think they kept Lou Williams. I don't know. It's kind of a hodgepodge, and there's some bright spots, but it's just not. I mean, I can't see them not finishing last in their division. I can't see it.
Uh, So, Steve, the over-under by Vegas happens to be less than Philadelphia's over-under. 24.5 is the over-under for the 76ers.
Mm-hmm.
What's your prediction in win total, over or under that number?
I think that's probably a pretty good number. I'd be kind of surprised if they were, I mean, if they were over, you know, if they were at 25, 26 games. But I think they're hovering right around that mid to low 20 number. I just, again, there's, it's just, I can't expect Luke Walton, a first-year head coach, to just come in, bring over all the things that he's learned throughout his coaching career, especially what he's learned coaching Golden State and things just clicking for everybody. Not in the division where you're going to have to contend with two of the better teams out west. Yeah, you still get games against Sacramento, who can be up and down at best. Phoenix is, you know, still trying to figure some things out. But the two teams you're going to automatically run into huge problems with are two of the better teams in your conference. So I don't, you know, I can't imagine they have more than, you know, a 23, 24, 25 win season. There's nothing that would give me assurance of that otherwise. I think when you look at Philadelphia by comparison, since we're kind of bringing that up, I think Vegas and probably people across the board would feel maybe more optimistic because of the talent that they're adding, but that optimism is resting on the potential that people see in guys like Joel Embiid, Sarkic, and even Ben Simmons. Comparatively, you kind of know what you're getting out of D'Angelo Russell, Clarkson, and Julius Randle. So what are the additions that you're excited about that you think can bring an addition? I think we all kind of know that Brandon Ingram is going to be able to score in the NBA, but he's physically a ways away, and we know he's going to have those rookie moments where he's just not going to have a great game, whether it's not shooting well, whether it's just not being able to get to the basket, whether it's just not finishing or whatever it is. So the optimism in Philadelphia in terms of what's being added is higher than what the optimism you would look at when you're looking at the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, if Clarkson has a much better year, maybe goes from scoring 15 a game to maybe, you know, 18, 19, 20, or D'Angelo Russell really breaks out next year and really starts to kind of show what he can do, then, yeah, maybe the combination of those two guys can push the optimism needle up some. But, again, there's not enough optimism there for me to get me to think that somehow they're going to go beyond a mid-20s finish. I just don't see it.
If you can remember the period the Lakers had between Magic Johnson retiring and mm-hmm. Shaquille O'Neal coming on board, mm-hmm. that's what this period of time will feel like for Laker fans. And I say that because this is obviously the first time in almost 22, 23 years you have not started your season with a Shaquille O'Neal or Kobe Bryant.
Right.
And here you are now with an unproven but immensely talented group of young players and a young first-year coach. And so
I just think the optimism is in terms of a franchise is even still markedly different, because at least back then, during the time period that you're referencing, they were still kind of that allure of playing for the Lakers. Free agents were still, you know, interested. Whereas now, I think over the last few free agency periods, we've seen and we've learned that the lure is, I don't want to say gone, but it's definitely not the same. So in order, you know, for those franchises to turn around, a Shaq did have to show up. They did eventually have to draft a Kobe. But who's going to be their next Shaq and Kobe? Or who's going to be the next either one of those guys to really push them over the hump? Or are they going to have to turn into a young team that's going to have to develop some guys into possibly being some young stars? And then maybe the playing style behind Luke Walton starts to build some excitement throughout the league, and then maybe they do get that one transcendent superstar guy that can kind of push them to that next level, and then somebody else gets in free agency and now interested in possibly joining the Lakers, you know, long term. That's just what that feels like to me. It feels like they're not in a rebuilding mode, but a what's our franchise going to be going forward mode. And to me, that's different because, yeah, to me, it's different because when you're rebuilding, there's usually some sort of identity there. There doesn't feel to be an identity in Los Angeles right now. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think they it's almost like they're not an ex. Look, you could be in a worse place if you were, let's say, an expansion team. You could definitely be in a worse place. But the Lakers almost are, only because they have young, recognizable talent, they're like a step in front of an expansion team. Would that be a fair summation?
I mean, usually, but usually expansion teams, you know, you're getting like the bottom feeders
But they don't have an identity, though. But I'm just what you said
they
about
don't.
Not having
but
an identity.
But at least with an expansion team, not only or at least with the Lakers, an expansion team, you're getting, you know, guys that typically other teams don't want or don't have room for. And yes, they don't have an identity because they're a brand new franchise in most cases. But with, at least with the Lakers, at least you've got some pieces that you feel optimistic about. So yeah, are they a step in front of that? Sure, but I still think even on that front, it's kind of difficult to compare them to an expansion team because, you know, it's still the Lakers in terms of they still have a
name.
Brand, like a great brand and a name. An expansion team does not have.
But
that.
You just said, but you just said that really doesn't mean anything. That's all I'm pointing.
No,
that's why I bring that up.
I'm saying the lure of wanting to play for the Lakers isn't there, but that doesn't mean they don't have a brand and a name. The name is still recognizable. It just doesn't mean the same thing it meant to other players. Now it still means, you know, plenty of money and getting revenue money for or generating revenue to where, you know, when they sign a local TV deal, they're getting all sorts of money. They're getting, you know, the kind of deals from Time Warner that reflect that they are still a top market in the NBA in terms of revenue. But aside from that, the lure of saying, hey, Russell Westbrook, you played here in California. Why don't you come on back home? Is Russell really going to, you know, sit there and say, yeah, let me go do that? Probably not. But does he have the same opportunity to come in and still be the guy that he is going to be this year for Oklahoma City? Sure. So, you know, there's to me, if I'm a free agent, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, you've got to give me something that shows me that you guys are building an identity as a club again. I don't want to hear about, you know, we're the Lakers. Okay, that's great. But that's like the people who hold on to, hey, we were great, and they're still telling you about how great they were from 20 years ago. I don't want to hear about that. What are you building now? Aside from keeping a name and a brand, what are you building now to really develop the club, the roster again? You know, and that's the part of the identity and the lure that's sorely missing. So, you know, does Luke Walton bring in some excitement on that front and start getting some of these younger players to play at a high level, and we start to see, you know, the upside that there is to a Julius Randle or a D'Angelo Russell or Jordan Clarkson? And maybe do we get a better season than we're expecting maybe out of the Timothy Mozgov that justifies to a certain degree, you know, his upside and the reason why they signed him? You know, there's a lot of ifs and maybes, but I think we've seen enough of all these guys that I'm mentioning to kind of know what we're getting, or at least feel like we know what we're getting. And since it's a new team and a new mesh and a new coach, the optimism level is just it's not there. So, you know, again,
all
I
right.
think if you compare it to Philadelphia, there's a lot of people that are excited to see what, you know, Embiid can do once he's on the floor. There's a lot of people that are excited to see kind of what Jahlil Okafor does in year two because he had a great year one. You know, what's this Dario Saric kid going to bring? We hear all these great things about him. So there's a lot of, like, optimism because there's a lot of these cool new pieces that nobody is really overly familiar with, whereas the optimism in L.A., it's like you know what these guys are about to a degree. And so unless there's some new enthusiasm thrown into the mix because of a new coach and the emergence of some of these young players taking that next step in their career, there's really not a whole lot to look forward to. And that's not a good draw to try to selling free agents to build on to, hey, we're the Lakers. Yeah, okay, yeah, you were Showtime. You were, you know, Shaq and Kobe. Well, what are you now? And that's part of the problem.
All right, and that's going to put a close on this preview for the 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm going to ask for a one-word answer from you, Steve. Mm-hmm. Which team has more wins in 2016 and 17, Sixers or Lakers?
I'm not optimistic like Vegas is about Philadelphia, so I will say I'll say that it ends up being the Lakers.
Interesting. All right. Our next set of previews that we'll do, we'll move to the teams that finished 14th last year. That would be the Brooklyn Nets in the Eastern Conference and the Phoenix Suns. As we said, we've got 14 more of these to do, and we'll be sprinkling these in between maybe some other podcasts, maybe even sprinkling them in a podcast like we did this. We'll kind of call them and one. So if you see these pop up, as their own separate unit, we'll call them and ones, a little supplement to our normal podcast. How's that sound, Steve?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We want to remind you to follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at BTA Hoops. Our Facebook page is Beyond the Arc Podcast. The website, beyondthearcradio.wordpress.com. And you can always send us an email if you're interested in being a part of the show, advertising, being a sponsor. We certainly have many spots. You would actually give us an opportunity to take a break because we could run your commercial during the middle of our podcast. Honestly, we would actually pause and take a break to tell our friends about your company and your venture. So btapodcast@gmail.com if you're interested in taking advantage. Let us work for you. I don't have a better slogan than that other than just to say, let us work for you. All right. You can follow Steve on Twitter at HWHoopCentral. Follow me, please, at DRB365. Yeah, I pleased it this time. At DRB365, and of course Steve is at HW Hoop Central, and that's going to be it until our next podcast or our next N1. Be on the lookout for those. We want to thank you for being a part of this experience and this show, and make sure to tell a friend, spread the word, like us. You know, write a good review on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud. And let's keep growing this Beyond the Arc basketball network. For Steve Barnhart from Hardwood Hoop Central, my name is Brian Fulford. We are out. Peace.
Beyond New York's theme music is performed by Lex Brown of O Hoops Music. Listen to more of Lex's music by visiting ohoops.com under the O Hoops TV banner.
Nothing like them other guys. I get paid to play every day and be televised. Very rude, how I'm breaking through. Very few wanna guard me, dude. I ain't making, so I'm breaking rules. Defying gravity and flying to that paper, dude. It's the king of this court, boy. About to be your nightmare. You ain't gotta come get me, just check it up and I'm right there. Shoot game is sick and I'm throwing up them trays, yo. You can call me Simon, my opponent, do as I say so.
I'm in my zone.